It's episode 6 of Unbelievable. We are closer to finding out our suspect. Or are we? We are closer to finding out why they call him Max the Knife. Or are we? We're discussing that and so much more on this after show, and it starts right now.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Hi, guys. How is everyone doing? Unbelievable episode 6, the after show. Once again, I'm Pueblo Boys. So glad to be part of your life in second screens or your podcast device. Big things are happening in episode 6 of Unbelievable, but before we do that, let's introduce our panel. First, on the far, far left, he is also known as another life correspondent. Give it up for Jack Farmer.
Or Jack the Knife, you could call me.
Oh, I like it.
That's great. And also, she is a dynamo person, personality, and one of the favorite people here on the panel. Give it up for Ms. Alexis Brown.
Hi. Oh, you put applause. Oh, my gosh. Can we do that every time?
We can.
I get a knife stab and you get an applause.
We are live here after Buzz. Just wanted to say overall thoughts of episode 6. We're heading towards the end, the final stretch. Twists and turns are abound in this story. Once you think you have everything figured out, boom, it's not. Overall thoughts, Alexis.
Even though I'm going through a roller coaster ride of knowing and not knowing, knowing and not knowing, I felt a little bit of hope in this episode that maybe, just maybe, even if we didn't find the guy, we are very, very, very close. So it was good. I was on the edge of my seat the whole time.
Jack?
Yeah, I agree. I thought your intro was perfect with the "we found things out" or "did we?" Because that is how this whole show has felt. But I agree. I think we're really getting close and we're at least narrowing it down to the right people.
Yeah. And while a lot of elements were happening, we'll probably get to the stakeout more because that was actually the real crux of this episode. But at first, I want to start with Marie off the top here. Mm-hmm. So this poor lady has gone through so much over the past couple of episodes, fully decided to take the plea deal. Just thoughts with you, starting with you, Jack. Just seeing the complications of her life, her personal life, and with her taking the plea deal.
Yeah, again, you feel bad for her. It seems like nothing is breaking her way, from the stuff at work to her own foster mother, who just seems terrible. You just feel bad. You don't really know what to do for her at that point, because she's kind of dug herself so deep. And I shouldn't say dug herself. She obviously was. It wasn't her choice to be in this situation to begin with, but you just feel bad for her.
Yeah,
Judith has done herself no favors, right?
No, she just seems mean. It seems like she almost... She's alluded to the fact that something had happened to her in her past. It almost seems like she is taking that out on Marie in a way. Because everything that Marie does, and obviously Marie is having some trouble, but it's almost like she's mad at Marie for going through this.
Mm. Yeah. Thoughts, Alexis?
I agree. I didn't think about it like that, though. The fact that she had gone through something similar may affect how she treats Marie. Because I feel like she should be more sympathetic because she's gone through that. But maybe she didn't get the justice she wanted, so she feels like Marie shouldn't get hers, or... I don't know. It's really weird. I don't know how to feel about it. But with Marie, just in general, I tried not to, but I felt like I was getting frustrated with her. Like, just tell the truth. Like, just tell them what happened. But I realize it's not always as easy as it may come across. So, yeah, I'm all over the place with both of them.
Yeah, I thought it was very good visual language here, how there was a time where she just said what happened to her matter-of-factly, and you kind of took it at face value, but now we're seeing flashes of the night of the attack. It seems to be weighing on her psyche. Jack, thoughts about that and how that's being portrayed?
Well, it's mirroring what happened to Amber in the last episode a bit, how she was holding herself together at first, but then she slowly started to crack, and the weight of it was becoming too much for her. But what's surprising to me in how she's dealing with this is that she is going back to Judith at all. It seems like Colleen is always there for her and supportive of her and helpful to her. But this whole episode, she kept going back to Judith, who was the one that was difficult and mean. And and I don't know if that's because maybe somewhere underneath all the things she's going through, Marie knows she needs someone that is going to force structure on her, or maybe there's a part of her that wants someone like Judith to say, hey, it didn't happen, move on, but she can't.
Right.
But yeah, it definitely is starting to weigh on her, and she's becoming such a sympathetic character. I definitely want her to get justice somehow.
Yeah.
For sure. I have to ask you this question. If you were Marie and you were on that trial and the idea of the plea deal was what? Probation, mandatory therapy, and a $500 fine. What would compel Marie not to say, hey, look, this really happened, in your opinion?
Honestly, I don't know. I think she's just going to have to reach that point in her psyche where she just can't take it anymore and can't continue to hold it in. You can tell as each episode goes by, it's getting harder and harder and harder not to think about and not to deal with. So I think it's just really just going to come to a breaking point for her.
Yeah, I mean, that's... I really thought that she would have come clean. This one, maybe the perfect dramatic moment, but, you know, real life doesn't work in perfect dramatic moments.
That's what I thought, too. I thought just in the middle of court, it's all a lie! Just out of there. But, you know.
And it's something easy for us to kind of look on and say, why doesn't she just say something? But we also have to remember that she's a 15-year-old kid. And 15-year-old kids don't always act and think in the same way that an adult would.
Yeah, once people have their mind made up about you, it'd be kind of hard to double back, especially when it comes to saying things that are truthful or not truthful, the perceived truthfulness of what you said.
Yeah, and I think that's what has a lot to do with it, too, is like maybe she really wants to say it, but she just thinks nobody's going to believe her at this point because she's too deep in the hole now.
And I think she just wants to put it all behind her. I think she just wants to end it so she doesn't have to deal with all this stuff anymore.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Julia says a line that was very interesting. She says, quote, if you wonder what spiraling out of control looks like, this is what it looks like. Is Marie spiraling out of control, Alexis?
Yeah, kind of, but I think rightfully so. But it doesn't seem crazy to us because we know the truth. So for her foster mom, she's like, what is wrong with this woman?
She didn't call back Chipotle. Jack?
I think not calling back Chipotle was the biggest mistake. No, it was I think she is spiraling out of control. Obviously, things happen beyond her control, but going out with the kids and drinking and smoking weed and doing things that she was specifically told not to do, specifically in this time, is a good example of that spiraling out of control. She's lost control of her life, again, whether it's her fault or not, but she's lost her friends, she's lost her job, she's doing things that could put her in jail. Yeah, I think to Judith's point, that she was right.
Yeah,
and it looks like she got expelled from the Rise Up program. The thing is, we always talk about victims and how they are victimized once from the attack, and then by their friends and family, and then the court of public opinion. If it comes to light, I know we're probably getting to predictions a little bit, but if it comes to light that maybe she was right to begin with, is it any point left of recovery for Marie? Is her psyche that damaged? I feel like she's been through it all. She lost her friend. She lost her job. She hasn't been to stay. Mm-hmm. She's like asking someone she doesn't particularly care for money. I mean, is there kind of a comeback for that?
Definitely a comeback. I feel like she's basically reached the bottom, and it's only up from here at this point. And I think the truth coming out is going to make things better for her. But she definitely, regardless, needs to see a psychologist, because I think she should have saw a psychologist before any of this happened, because she's just, aside from this rape, she's been through so much trauma in her life and had so many issues.
Sure, final thoughts, Jack?
Yeah, I agree. She's gone through things her entire life. And so she's a quietly strong character, I think. So I think she can bounce back from it because she's already been through so much. She does keep on ticking. She just needs something to help put her back on the right track. And hopefully, I think justice is something that would help her do that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Before we're moving on, Jackie, do us the world a favor and tell us how they can listen to this AfterBuzz show and other AfterBuzz shows.
Yeah, so first and foremost, we just want to say thank you so much for making us the ESPN of TV talk here at AfterBuzz. And the way we do that is by having viewers and listeners like yourselves, whether it be on YouTube, Spotify, or iTunes. We thank you so much, but we do have a huge, huge favor to ask, and that is to take those mouses and click the like button, click that subscribe button, click the 5-star review button, and if you have the time, leave a comment, leave a review, and hey, if you really enjoy this show, the very best thing you can do is share it with a friend. That is how we're able to keep providing more content for you guys. So thanks again.
Yes.
Do we say mouses? I don't know the word. It's mice, mouse, trackpad.
Mice.
Tonight's episode opens up with Duval coming back from Kansas with her haul, just a lot more questions, making things a lot more vague, and it really has another interaction with Lily. Now, we talked about Lily before in the past episode, how her perception of being a victim is in the show. Just let's just your thoughts about that, how she's so forward with our PD detectives.
Well, I kind of think she's crazy. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to put her craziness to the side for the just because of what she's been through.
Sure.
Aside from her craziness and just her, I guess, not hallucinations or however she's saying things, I think she was still helpful in some ways. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, that last conversation she had with the detective, she started to feel like maybe I can kind of trust them.
Yeah.
So maybe there is hope for her.
Yeah, there's a bit of a plead thing there. It was like, look, man, I understand you're upset, and we'll even, like, allow some of the outward behavior, but we're trying to help.
Right.
What's going on with that? Mm-hmm. Jack, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm very interested to see where the story goes with that knife she dropped off. Because she came by, she dropped off this knife, says she found it later. They didn't find anything else in the searches. There was no evidence on the knife. But a show like this, I can't imagine they just had that scene for no reason.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So I'm very curious to see. Because also, the suspect or the perpetrator or whoever the rapist is so detailed, I can't imagine they would just leave a knife behind.
Yeah. Right,
either. So the story behind that is very interesting to me.
Sure. Our main suspect at the time was James Massey, the one with both the military history and the history of domestic violence. Detective Rassaman tries to, like, corner the guy, but it kind of backfires. Alexis, walk me through this. What happened?
Well, one, it's totally disgusting to spit in someone's face.
Agreed.
I almost lost it. But even after that scene, I was like, he still could be the guy, and that's why he's acting like that. So I was a little bit surprised that they didn't consider trying to pursue him.
Yeah.
And I'm just really curious how he found out about her. I know he said he had a lot of friends, but I just want to know exactly what it was that made it that he knew.
Now, before this episode, do you think that he was the guy? Do you think he was the main suspect? Or, you know, going in there, there'd probably been someone else behind him?
Like, going into this episode, right?
Yeah, before he's... Yeah.
I think I definitely thought it was because of the evidence they found, and I think he acted really guilty in the bar. Like, if you don't feel like she's going to find something on you, why are you spitting on her? Why are you acting out like that? He acted guilty to me.
Yeah. Jack, I mean, I'm not sure you've been spit in the face before, but put me through, like, Detective Rassaman's, just her psyche there. Trying to think this lead down, meeting someone who obviously looks pretty evil, and then surprise.
Right. Yeah, you have to be, there's got to be a mix of the disappointment that you got caught, the embarrassment that you got caught, the shame that you got put in your place, the anger, because this guy clearly is a jerk, and knowing that none of that worked. The question, obviously, is how he knew, whether it be he can just read a police officer and just knows that, hey, that's obviously a detective, or whether he knows who Grace is, because he knew her name.
Yeah.
Or if, like he said, he knows people high up, if he knows someone who tipped him off that, hey, they're coming for you.
Right. Yeah. And it made me wonder if, you know, because it seemed like them bringing up that they thought it was a cop was kind of an accident. So it made me wonder if that slip up is the reason why that happened.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny how we were talking about how this show in general kind of like subverts tropes and stereotypes, and it would be very easy to find the person with a bad history being like, oh, I read a book and I've changed. And, no, this guy is still the guy you would think that would commit domestic violence, or, I mean, he spit in the face of another person, one, and another police officer, two, you know. And,
right.
A certain kind of evil that can support some of that. But, I mean, it wasn't all for loss for Detective Rassaman. She got some good news from her husband, Steve. Now, there was a back and forth all season about Steve being, no, I can't do it, I can't reach that far, but he comes through. Alexis, walk me through that. How do you feel if you're Detective Rassaman? It was the right move for Steve? I mean, I don't know. A lot of things can be taken from here.
Happy wife, happy life. You can only go so long. The wife always gets it. That's a gem for you.
Okay,
yeah, I'm not surprised, and I'm glad that he did.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
You glad that he, like, broke the rules of protocol and did this, crossed the line?
But it was for good reason. One, he was helping his wife, who is obviously desperate at this point to figure this thing out. And two, it could possibly get a rapist off of the streets.
Sure.
Yeah, I think he's going to look back and say to himself, why didn't I just do this sooner so she would have been mad at me for so long?
Mm-hmm.
As viewers, again, we look at it and we say, why didn't you do this? Clearly he's the guy. But again, you have to think, if you're him and you have all this power and all these records, it's your job to watch these things and the damage it could do to you if it gets out that you did get this information out.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's going to pay off in some way, so it's good he did.
Mm-hmm.
I think we all just look back and think, why didn't you do that in the first place if you were going to Or at least wait till the anniversary to do it so you get some brownie points, right?
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, it's a smart tactical move, but I wouldn't recommend.
That's how you become Attorney General.
Steve says, quote, says he's okay with this kind of doing the wrong thing and do the right thing, which I guess is kind of noble in its own right, but mm-hmm. there's that other thing to be saying, hey, look, he's a public official, so I kind of, sort of, maybe should not do that, but apparently the panel feels like he did the right move there.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Again, it is a bit as a viewer, because again we've seen shows like Making a Murderer where people did the wrong things and we feel the wrong things to convict someone and we all feel terrible about how that goes. So to be fair, there's a narrative influence on us as well.
And think of all the bad things public officials do. Can we just get one good thing?
And hopefully this show does it.
Yeah.
Speaking of the officials of the public, they had the giant ready room meetup, the war room situation, Taggart and the joint task force, if you will, mm-hmm. Trying to find the case. It looked like it was going to be a dead end for a bit, but mm-hmm. then Elias from downtown comes in there and has the phrase, what was it said? Rosemary says, intern, good work. So, Alexis, let me do this. If you're Elias, are you waiting there? Do you wait to say you don't have anything? Or do you just, walk me through that scene.
I mean, I think it kind of was like he was just like kind of sitting off in the cut, like,
playing double dutch.
I'm about to drop this bomb on them. That's how it felt like to me. I was proud. I was hoping that he was going to come through for them. I kind of felt like the intern was going to save the day at some point. Yeah. So I'm glad he did.
It's always good when a minor character comes in with a breakthrough. We saw it with Mia last episode, but definitely Elias with the, bam, here's my license number. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they need to give him a job now.
Sure.
Yeah, that's the biggest break of the case.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Obviously, figuring out the car, figuring out the license, the location, all that information on his own. I would have walked in there with some fire and said, everyone shut up. I've got information. Boom. You're welcome.
Excuse me, the Department of Justice member. I'm Elias, the intern. Was found, license plate 66GFT1, and it was a white Mazda, and it was registered to a Christopher McCarthy, mm-hmm. new person of interest. Mm-hmm. Now, at that moment, not going ahead, but at that moment, were you like, this is the guy?
No.
Really?
No, because they were still talking about James Massey, mm-hmm. and his cell phone pinging at towers near the other attacks. And so I don't know what the situation is, but I'm not 100% sure on either of them or whether or not it's both of them, but
yeah.
I'm still not 100% sure either way.
Are you on board with the accomplice theory?
But yes, very on board with the accomplice theory. Everyone's guilty.
It's the same thing that you didn't think that McCarthy would be the person.
Sorry about that, y'all. I don't know. I just turned that off.
You got it.
Thank okay. I think towards the end I did, but like you said, when they first got to the house, I was like, they already got the guy. He's spitting her face. We know who he is. So that's what I thought.
Straight.
But I've just learned on this show to never think I know.
Right.
I don't even want to get excited about it or think it's the guy until I know it's the guy.
Yeah.
No matter how often the show tells us that, I still find myself trying to act like I know who's going to do it.
That's what's the fun of these things.
I'll act like, nope, y'all not going to get me. Nope. I'm not going to get excited.
That's the CSI effect all over. So it ends up to a stakeout. But before we even get to the actual police work involved, there was some character play in there between Grace and Duval. Mm-hmm. Because a little bit earlier, we had Grace go out there and just say, look, man, your God... whatever, you saw the show, you know, mm-hmm. I'm not gonna repeat what she said. I always thought it was interesting how it felt like Duval's faith was in the background, mm-hmm. and in the last three episodes it was like, bruh, you know, I put it out there first, but it gives a little bit of more character, more depth, but sometimes I feel like it is kind of a nerve the show hits, so mm-hmm. So what's your opinion about that, their interaction together in that car while they were on a stakeout, Alexis?
As far as like this introduction of being in church and really believing in God. Sometimes something like this can bring you back to God.
Sure.
Because like maybe she hasn't had time to really make sure she was in the Word or going to church or having faith, or maybe it just she did it, but it wasn't like a big thing for her. But now just going through all this stuff with the case, the stress, the overwhelmingness, the feeling of helplessness with not knowing what to do, that can really drive you to God.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, maybe that was something that led her there. Maybe that's why they're starting to see all these things turn around, because like we learn in all Tyler Perry movies, God will turn your life around.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Even the plays, which are superior, for my opinion.
Very true.
I wouldn't know.
Fair.
I think the... I think with the religion being added in, it actually is really great for the characters, because mm-hmm. you'll notice Duval always has more hope and faith in the case, it seems, mm-hmm. where Grace seems to be a lot more pessimistic, a lot more negative. Mm-hmm. And I think we can derive from that that maybe the fact that she has faith and she has a religion is why she's more hopeful and yeah. more positive about mm-hmm. things. And when she has a little bit of a lead, she says, this is it, this is the chance, where Grace says, no, I don't believe in anything.
It's a great perspective. Yeah. Hope and faith is very, very important. Mm-hmm. And I like the fact that they both remember their first rape cases. Mm-hmm. I'm sure as a police officer, you remember your first of a lot of milestones, yeah. but they kind of bonded about that. Mm-hmm. And we got some backstory into the relationship between Grace and Mr. Director Duval. Jack, walk me through this one. I know there was a bit of a tension at first because we knew Duval knew Rasmussen, but we knew it was vice versa. It confirmed that she didn't, or she'd remember her there. Just like that revelation that between those two characters.
I think it makes a lot more sense now why Duval didn't bring it up, because I think if they were to meet and originally start with, hey, I used to idolize you, then Grace would say, I'm the boss then, yeah. and I'm going to walk all mm-hmm. over you. And so Duval wanted to build their own credibility before saying, oh, I worshipped you for 10 years mm-hmm. or anything like that. So it makes that make a lot more sense. I don't know if it's going to play much more into the story. I hope it mm-hmm. does. But it was nice that it was cool to hear her say, that's why I knew I had to lean in and to take charge and show up on the scene and own it, and I don't need to question who I am or what I'm doing just because there's a lot of males here.
Yeah.
Alexis, have you ever worked with an idol before? Like, something you're like, oh man, I'm inspired by you. At all?
I mean, I work for Oprah technically, but I mean, I don't work with her.
Number one with a bullet. No, no, say no more. That's so cool. So the stakeout actually happens, and for a while they're led to believe that they're on the case for the guy. We go for always the diner. We get that evidence, and we get a swerve at the end that Chris McCarthy isn't Chris McCarthy. Mm-hmm. He is somebody else. Mm-hmm. He's the brother of the person they thought it was. Yeah. Will the real Chris McCarthy please stand up? Alexis, help me out.
You know what I thought when I figured out that they were brothers, though? I thought maybe they're doing it together. It could not be that. The brother may not know anything that's going on, but that was a thought that came into my head. Like, oh, maybe it's a tag team type of thing.
Nobody's innocent.
Nobody. Not even the woman in the Toyota.
Yeah.
She in on it, too.
You know, they actually had... She probably is. They, you know what, though? Good detective work and education about how detective stuff works on this show made me realize that if they are brothers, they can still use the DNA, because they mm-hmm. explained earlier in the show
right.
that they do have that test that can prove if DNA is from a family strain.
The YSTRs.
The YSTR.
I didn't even think about
so
that.
Because when it first happened, I thought, oh, that means that DNA is worthless. But then mm-hmm. I remembered, no, we can use that. Mm-hmm. They can use that. I'm not involved. They can use that and figure out, at least narrow down that family. If I know that that's the family, then mm-hmm. they at least know that. I mean, come on, then it's got to be Chris.
Yeah.
Christofferson? What was it?
Chris McCarthy. Chris Christofferson is somebody else.
So we
do have the McCarthy. We do have Massey in play. We do have there's some ancillary characters. I mean, Max the Knife is not necessarily a suspect, but he's still in the background hanging out, mm-hmm. According to your old theories. Is it too early to even speculate who we think this person is? Is there another person over there on the edge of that we haven't even seen yet?
Maybe. You never know with this show. But I'm really thinking it's Chris. That's what I think.
Okay, that's fair.
I think it's a team. I think James Massey's still involved. I think Chris is still involved. I think Max the Knife probably isn't. I think that's just going to be a funny little thing they add when she finds out what Max the Knife is.
Sure. Best red herring ever. But now it's time for my favorite segment of the show. It's now time for Who Gotcha?
Who Gotcha?
Who gotcha? So today I have a fun story. It's about a Brazilian man who decided he wanted to rob a pharmacy.
Huh?
So he drives up to a pharmacy, right? He leaves the car idling because he wants to be able to make a quick getaway. He runs in. He goes to the pharmacy. While he's in the pharmacy, someone else steals his car.
Oh, no.
So he comes out with a bunch of money in his hand, bags of money.
Yeah.
And he's like, where's my car? Where's my car? Someone else comes up and robs him of the money.
Oh, no.
That he stole. So now he's like, I've lost it all. I'm going to call the police to report the car. So he goes to the police station to report the car. While he's at the police station reporting the car, the pharmacy owner comes in and
oh
says,
my gosh,
that's the guy that robbed me.
Yeah.
And so the pharmacy owner caught him. That's who caught you, the pharmacy owner. But it gets better. So the news was in the station for some reason, and they started interviewing this guy, and he's telling them the story.
Yeah.
And he says, man, I lost this car that I put so much work into getting, and I lost this car I worked so much to get. And the reporter jokingly asks, did you buy it or steal it? And he says, well, I stole it.
Oh, wow.
So he admits to stealing the car as well. On TV.
That's just further proof that most people catch themselves. They just totally does something else and catch themselves.
I was about to feel sorry for him kind of too. Like, dang, he was having a really bad day. Nothing was going right. He probably spilled his coffee that morning. Like, it was probably just a really bad
day. That's it.
That must not be a part of town you want to spend much time in either. Three different robberies all happened.
Where the heck were they?
He just walks to a police station. Yeah, that's a guy who robbed me. Get him. Dang, who caught you?
So who caught you? The pharmacy owner caught you.
And yourself, apparently.
Yeah, pretty much.
Moving on, it's now time for news.
Yes. All right, so.
I love that drop.
All right, guys. So if you were wondering what happened to the male detectives from episode one, and we kind of got a glimpse of them in the last couple episodes, I have an update for you. So the detectives in the real case, because this is we forget that this show is about a real crime that took place. In the real world, their names are Sergeant Jeffrey Mason and Jerry Ritgum. And when, I guess, whatever happens, happens, they're going to figure out that they probably should have been a little bit nicer about what they did, that it was wrong, because they're going to be brought in for questioning. But after that questioning, nothing happens to them.
Oh.
They keep their jobs. Life goes on. Nothing ever happens. They're not reprimanded or nothing. They just get a nice tap on the booty. And that's it.
A nice tap on the booty? Nice.
Yeah, well, like a nice tap. Not like a smack, but like a tap.
I heard a slap on the wrist, but tap on the booty sounds like something else.
Tap on the booty?
That sounds...
Yeah, so if you're wondering what happened to them, absolutely nothing happened to them. So.
Wow, who caught you? No one.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for that update. We're six episodes in, so I got to ask you, it's now time for predictions.
And now, you're after Buzz TV.
I don't know why I danced like this.
No, that's my favorite drop. What do you guys think is going to happen?
I think we're going to find out it is a big group of people who are doing this, a much bigger group of people than we would like to think.
Okay.
Okay, vague, but I like it.
Okay, I think it'll be Chris, it'll be James, and it'll be a third person that we do not know yet.
Okay. I'm thinking what my friend over here said is that they're going to be able to use the mug to catch Chris, and that he's going to be the one who ultimately did it. That's what I think.
I'm going to put myself out on the limb here. I think with the dark web and the book, I do think there is a bit of like a trade group or union of different individuals, but there's going to be a mastermind. I'm not sure what the mastermind is, but I do think there's multiple people in multiple states. Mm-hmm. But that is just my opinion. I could be wrong. I've been wrong many, many times before.
And you'll be wrong more and more times.
Yeah, that's definitely. Thanks
I've been wrong for, literally every time.
Thanks so much for the confidence. And you will be wrong many, many times. It's been a pleasure, but it's now time for us all to get out of here. Jack Farmer, where can the world find you online?
You can find me at jackcfarmer.com. You can also find me at Jack Farmer across all social media. So the conversation continues on Twitter. You can also find me on AfterBuzz's live sporting shows like WWE Raw and NXT.
Nice. And you guys can find me on Twitter and Instagram at I Am Lexi Fierce. That is IAMLEXIFIERCE.
Lexi Fierce.
Yes.
I'm Flobo Voice. You can find me at Flobo Voice on Twitter, at Flobito on Instagram, and Flobito.com. And until next time, buzz you later.
Bye.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.